In 2 Peter 1:5, we find the word virtue. This term is not a very common word in the New Testament. It is found only a handful of times, but even though it's not used very often, it is a fairly simple word. There are two basic ideas contained in the word virtue. If you were to look at this term in the original language, you would find that much of the word translated virtue is associated with excellence. There are some things in life that are okay, there are some other things that are good, there are some other things that are great, but every once in a while we come across someone or something that we would apply the word excellent to. As we look at that word in 2 Peter 1:5, we would say that there is a sense in which Christians should not be good people. Christians should not be okay people or even great people. Christians should be excellent people. And that's not the standard for the preacher. That's not the standard for the elders. It's not the standard for the deacons or the Bible class teachers. It's not the standard for wives and for husbands and parents and children. But anyone who is somehow associated with the church, the word virtue in 2 Peter 1:5 says that we want to have a life which is a life that is excellent. We want to have the word excellent attached to our name. As you look at the word that's translated excellent in 2 Peter 1:5, you find that outside the New Testament, this word was sometimes associated with soil. People in ancient times knew that soil could be so good, so fertile, so useful when it came to planting a crop that it was truly excellent ground. Now, we know the value of that. Some of us have put in gardens, and we know that we don't want to try to sow a garden out there on the side of the parking lot where we've got rocks. It's just not going to work that well. We want good. We want excellent. We want the best possible soil. And our lives, Peter is saying, should be like outstanding soil. If there were a book that had a list of excellent people in life, Peter is telling us our name should qualify for that book. The word virtue not only describes excellence, if you will, it is also a word that conveys or has the idea of courage contained in it. Now, as you think about these two things, we find that there are some who strive for excellence, but they don't have courage. Not all people who have courage have excellence. But if we can find an individual, man or woman, young person or old person, who has courage plus a desire and the indication that in that life there is excellence, we have found a truly outstanding individual. Tonight we want to look at the word virtue in 2 Peter 1:5 based on the life of David. I want to go back in many respects. David is a man that lived a virtuous life in the sense that Peter uses that word in 2 Peter chapter 1 verse 5. Our text is going to begin in 1 Samuel 26. Now, as you lead up to this chapter, to give you kind of a preview of what was taking place, you may remember that David was hunted by Saul, and that's really where we are as far as this section of the Old Testament. Saul wanted to kill David. Back in 1 Samuel 24, we find that there was an occasion where David was able, as far as his physical proximity, he was able to get very close to Saul. In fact, he was so close, he was able to cut off part of Saul's robe. On this particular occasion, David would have been able to kill Saul, but he did not do that. A person who strives for excellence wants to be as merciful as possible. And that's what we see David doing in places like 1 Samuel 24. As we look at life today, we know that there are people who show almost no mercy in life. There are people who are cold, they are heartless, they are calloused, they're cruel. But excellence means that we want to show as much mercy as possible to others. That's how God acts. And if we want to be one of his people, that should be how we act. In 1 Samuel 25, we learn how Samuel begins to fade from the picture. In fact, he dies. This is also the chapter where David sought help from a man named Nabal. Now, it's interesting because as you move from 1 Samuel 24 to 1 Samuel 25, David's excellence begins to slip a little bit in 1 Samuel 25. 1 Samuel 25 is where we have David going to Nabal for help. He asks for some provisions. Nabal is not that enthused. In fact, he basically turns David down. And because Nabal rejects David's request, David is ready to kill him. He's angry. As you think about how this information relates to the word virtue in 2 Peter chapter 1, you have a second point, which I think is very important as we talk about excellent. We would like to be excellent all the time. God would like to see his people be excellent all the time. But there are going to be occasions, there are going to be periods where we fail in our quest for excellence. In some respects, David does fail in 1 Samuel 25. So when we think about excellence, a realistic standard is most of the time, because there will be some periods when we do blow it. It's great to want to be excellent all the time, but there will be occasions where that simply does not occur. Well, that information then brings us to our text, 1 Samuel 26. Messengers were sent to King Saul to let him know where David was hiding. That's in verse 1. David learns where Saul's camp is, and he wants to get a closer look at things. 1 Samuel 26, looking at the information in verses 5 through 7. And David arose and came to the place where Saul had encamped, and David beheld the place where Saul lay. And Abner the son of Ner, the captain of the host, and Saul lay within the place of the wagons, and the people were encamped round about him. Then answered David and said to Ahimelech the Hittite and to Abishai the son of Zeruiah, brother to Joab, saying, who will go down with me to Saul to the camp? And Abishai said, I will go down with thee. So David and Abishai came to the people by night, and behold, Saul lay sleeping within the place of the wagons with his spear stuck in the ground at his head, and Abner and the people lay round about him. Earlier it was noted from 2 Peter 1:5 how the word virtue in that particular passage contains the idea of courage. Here in David's life we see an example of courage. He is willing to actually go into an armed camp where people want to kill him. That took some courage. Today when we think about excellence, true excellence also requires courage. We may not always be quite as courageous as we would like to be. Sometimes our courage may fail. But 1 Samuel 26 reminds us that if we are striving for excellence, part of that particular quality is the desire to develop and demonstrate courage. If that's how we're living, we're probably going to be in a position to inspire others with confidence. That may be our mate, that may be our children, it may be people at work, people in the congregation where we worship. David asked for volunteers to go into this enemy camp. Had they been caught, we're not specifically told, but you go into the camp of an enemy and the enemy wants to kill you, more than likely you're going to die. David asked for volunteers, and as we saw, he did not come away empty-handed. Excellence in David's life is found a few verses later in 1 Samuel 26, moving down to the information in verse 9. And David said to Abishai, destroy him not, for, that's speaking of Saul, for who can put forth his hand against Jehovah's anointed and be guiltless? Here was another occasion where David had the chance to kill Saul, a man who wanted to destroy him. But rather than do that, David said, I'm going to show mercy to this individual. One day a month, Keith and I go down to a preacher's meeting in Columbia City. And one of the men that attends this meeting on a regular basis has made a comment a time or two about how he was wronged in the past. And I've heard that more than once from this particular fella, and I've also heard, and Keith has heard this as well, about not only has this brother been mistreated by some folks in the past, but rather than try to attempt that wrong, this fella said, I'm going to leave you to God. If someone needs to deal with you, if someone needs to correct the situation, if the injustice really has occurred as I believe it has, God is going to handle the situation and God can do a much better job of it than I. This man, as he's made this comment a time or two, in my judgment, he's shown some excellence as far as handling that situation. That's really the way that David acts here in 1 Samuel 26. David said to the man that he was with, yeah, some things are definitely not right with Saul, but God is going to deal with this man in the proper way at the proper time. We didn't read verse 10, but if we were to include that passage as well, that's where David said, I don't know what God has planned for Saul. There could be different things that happen in the future to this fella. But David said, I am going to leave things in God's hands. When we think about Christians leading an excellent life, this is another important point. There's some things in life that as we go through our journey, we need to leave them in the hands of God. Last Sunday night, if you were here, we studied one of the qualities from 2 Peter 1:5, the quality before this, and that quality of his course, faith. We talked about Romans 1:17, where Paul says, faith unto faith. He uses that expression. And we noted in that lesson that that describes faith as a beginning point. Faith is the middle point. Faith is the ending point. Everything that is related to Christianity can somehow be connected to the idea of faith. That's what David shows here. He had faith in God as far as God dealing with Saul, and faith is still one of the great keys to excellence. Skipping ahead a bit, we come to a much different set of circumstances in 1 Samuel 30. David and his men had been on the run for a little while, and in 1 Samuel 30, they return to the place where they're living, and they get a shock. They, as they get back to this area, find that that area had been raided. The city has been burned to the ground. They find that their wives have been taken. Their children had been carted off by enemies. And David's men, as they see what's been done to the city, they are so upset that they want to kill David. And that's what they talk about, verse 6. And David was greatly distressed. Why? For the people, that would be his men, spake of stoning him because the soul of all the people was grieved. How come? Every man for his sons and for his daughters, but David strengthened himself in Jehovah his God. People who strive for excellence, and we would say that David did, have and maintain their confidence in God. Anyone can profess to be a Christian when times are easy. What really matters, what really counts, are the times when life gets hard. What happens when adversity comes? How do we respond during those occasions? What happens when people and circumstances rise up against us, like things happen with David here in 1 Samuel 30? Do we throw in the towel, or do we say God is going to see us through? Do we draw closer to God, or do we turn from him? The word virtue in 2 Peter 1:5, as we look at it through David's life, tells us that we want to draw closer and closer to God. The worse, the more difficult times are, the closer we want to be to deity. David had the courage to see this through, and as you look at verse 8, you find he asks, should we pursue the attackers? He doesn't give up. He doesn't throw in the towel. He says, I'm willing to go after these guys. The book of 1 Samuel, as you look through this document, you find David's excellence being demonstrated in a wide variety of ways. And as we said, he was not always perfect, but in many ways he did demonstrate excellence time and time again. And as you get to the end of 1 Samuel, you'll find that David's excellence does not stop with this book. In 2 Samuel, we also find some illustrations of how David tried to live an excellent life. In fact, in 2 Samuel, you find in the first chapter something that's a bit unusual. 2 Samuel chapter 1, verse 7 says that David, the fellow that's being pursued by Saul, the latter chapters of 1 Samuel, is grieved over the death of Saul. Now here is a fellow, he's being chased, he's being pursued, and yet when his enemy dies, David experiences sadness at that point. Not only does David experience sadness, you also find as you look through 2 Samuel chapter 1 that David wrote a lamentation. There was a funeral dirge written on behalf of Saul. This also contains an important lesson for us. Today, the people who are striving for excellence seek to deal with their enemies in a good way. When we look at the world, we find that the unsaved want to destroy their enemies. Let's just get rid of them. Our opponents, we'd like to go ahead and just wipe them off the face of the map. But when we think about people who have virtue, 2 Peter 1:5, we find people who want the best for their enemies. People with virtue want their enemies to become children of God. No matter how wicked, no matter how vile someone is towards us, we do not want that person to be lost. The soul of an enemy is just as valuable as the soul of a close friend. Is it not true that Jesus was just as concerned about Judas as he was Peter and Paul? Andrew? He was. Now those fellows acted in different ways, but Jesus was just concerned with one as he was the others. Our world, as we look at it, is very in tune, if you will, with the idea of excellence. It thinks a lot about excellence. It talks a lot about excellence. But as we look at the world and its definition for excellence, usually what we find in the world as far as excellence is not what we find in the scriptures. Those two things are worlds apart, even though people use the same terminology. A few days ago, had a light bulb burn out. And, you know, sometimes the light bulb can burn out in the house and you think, well, I got to find a new one. And then you have some of the light bulbs that, you know, were used on a regular basis and you say, I can't wait very long. Well, the light bulb that I needed to replace was in that second category. It's a bulb that gets a lot of use. So I went to Walmart. That was fairly close. And I looked for an exact replacement. Just about ready to pick the light bulb off the shelf and take it up and pay for it. And there was a fella, a sales associate, that came up to me. And I'm not exaggerating when I tell you he was enthused about light bulbs. I mean, that just seemed to be his thing. I had what I needed in my hand, but he insisted that I come down with him, you know, probably 10, 15 steps and see one of the new light bulbs that Walmart is now carrying. Now, the light bulb was not in any way related to what I needed, but he drugged me down the aisle and then gave me the sales pitch. As we walked down the aisle, he said that he was changing all the bulbs in his house over to this new light bulb. And this was really the best way to go. The light bulb that he showed me cost, believe it or not, $40. $40 for a light bulb. And he's swapping out all the bulbs in his house. You know, going green is the excellent way to live. And it may cost you $40 a pop, but hey, that's cheap. And this light bulb, if you've never seen a $40 light bulb, it actually has vents in it. Vented light bulb, and that's supposed to deflect the heat. And he said, this is the way to go, and it will last you 13 years. I didn't have the heart to tell him that I had some similar bulbs in my house that have lasted for more than 6 years and they cost me less than $3 a piece. But anyway, you know, the mind of this man was set in such a way where a mark of excellence was going green, spending all kinds of money on these light bulbs. Now, you know, I'm not for trashing the planet. I don't think any Christian should be. But true excellence is not found in focusing on environmental issues. A lot of people in the world, that is their mark, that is their concept of excellence. But true excellence, 2 Peter 1:5, this virtue is found in the Christian life. But a lot of people have gotten confused with respect to the word excellence. A few days ago, I also noticed a national newspaper article that was bearing these headlines, "Boiling Up with Anger." In this article, the author said more and more people are losing their cool in public. He went on to say in this article, there is very little, if any, social consequence to turning on the flames. In other words, people get angry and nobody really says anything about that anymore. It's just almost expected. Any idiot in life can get angry. Just about any person can have a temper tantrum. But you know, there is no excellence in insulting people. There is no excellence in railing. There is no excellence in verbally assaulting people. But there is excellence in being able to control one's temper, one's speech. Self-control is a mark of excellence. As I continued to flip through this section of the paper, there was something else that caught my eye in this particular day's paper. There was an article that said a lot of term papers are now being turned in that are actually the work of someone else. College students are buying papers and then turning in those papers as if they had written them. Now this, if you follow, you know, this kind of thing, it's been going on for a lot of years. It's certainly not a new problem. But it does seem that this kind of issue is getting worse. One recent survey said that about 4% of the information that was checked contained information that was at least 80% not original with the person that submitted the paper. What kind of student submits copies of work done by others? Or buys a paper from some paper mill and then submits his or her name and says, this is my project for the course. In so many ways, our world has gotten away from teaching excellence. Or when it talks about excellence, it has somehow redefined that word to mean something that is not in any way associated with the scriptures. But God tells us that people can be excellent. And the Bible goes on to tell them how that can be done. People embrace the qualities that we find in the scripture. They can have an excellent life, and oftentimes they can blend with that excellence courage. Those are needed qualities in the world. People are looking for those qualities. And as Christians, those are qualities that we should display. Those should be a natural part of the Christian life. Tonight, if God were to say, all right, we have X number of people here, and I'm going to pull out the ones who are excellent, I'm going to separate those from the ones who are not. Which side of the ledger would we be on? Again, nobody's going to be perfect. Nobody's going to be excellent all the time. The Bible does not call us to that standard. The Bible recognizes that we're going to fail if that is our standard. But in general, we can try to live an excellent and courageous life for God. If God said, I'm going to put the excellent and courageous people here, and God said, I'm going to put the other people here who are not excellent and courageous, which side would we be on? This one or this one? If we would not be classified with the excellent and the courageous folks, God says we can change that. The process begins by becoming a Christian. We have faith in Christ. We choose the excellent way, and that takes some courage. We repent, a mark of excellence. It takes some courage. We confess that Christ is the Son of God, a mark of excellence, and something that takes some courage. And then we take that final courageous step. We're baptized into Christ so we can begin living an excellent and courageous life. If we've not made that choice tonight, we can do that. If we have made that choice and some things have not gone as they should, and we've left the excellent life, we've not continued to live a courageous life for Christ, God says it's possible to resume that course. And he invites us to do that as we stand and sing the selected song.